Welcome back to Shattering This. The U.S. government has now admitted that it's making roughly $100 billion in improper payments every year. It's making $100 billion in improper payments every year thanks to a combination of fraud, clerical error, and insufficient IRS enforcement, according to the testimony at a congressional hearing last week. Can you imagine that? Here's an agency of the U.S. government. The U.S. government is on the surface. We are $17.5 trillion in debt, which is greater than the U.S. Gross domestic product for a year. So our debt exceeds 100% of GDP. And our actual debt, which is would be debt for any business, which are contingent liabilities, liabilities for things that are due and have been promised, for which there is no fund or reserve for those long-term contingent liabilities like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, as well as government pensions, exceeds another $50 trillion. So the government's in debt almost $70 trillion. And it's no wonder the government would be in debt $70 trillion because it's making $100 billion in improper payments every year. Now, in addition to that, of course, it squanders $1 trillion every year on its military. Now, I know you can look up the military expenditures for yourself, and you'll see that it's about $650 billion. You say, it's not a trillion. $650 billion is only two-thirds of a trillion. Yeah, why don't you look at the next line and see what it pays for veterans affairs? And you add another $200 billion. And then why don't you look and see what it costs for the United States to breach its own constitution and make matters worse, not only in America, but around the world with the CSA, the CIA and FBI and also the NSA. And those clandestine as well as quasi-police, nationalistic police organizations. Pretty soon you're right up there above $1 trillion every year that we're squandering, making a bad situation worse. And then you've got the next two largest contributors to the national debt each year. Nationalized health care, which is being run about as effectively as the United States is running the Department of Veterans Affairs and its VA hospitals, and is only going to get worse and less efficient as it is more and more nationalized over Obamanation. And then there's the pyramid scheme known as Social Security, which is a complete fraud. You know, there is no Social Security trust fund. 15% of the wages of individuals, half by the company, half by the individual himself, is confiscated so that a pyramid scheme can be promoted by the government. And that collectively those three things, nationalized medicine, the pyramid scheme known as Social Security, as well as the defense and spying apparatus of the U.S. government, collectively represent about three-quarters of the spending. And then on top of that, you have $100 billion in improper payments. This is the quote. The amounts here are absolutely staggering, Representative John Mica, a Republican from Florida, said. Oh, thank you, John. You know, I probably couldn't figure it out that $100 billion in improper payments a year was a staggering amount. But now that you've clarified that, we'll go on with the article. The problem of erroneous payments, largely from Medicare and other health programs, is not a new one, and wasn't one fixed by Obamanation. No, all of the egregious costs associated with the nationalized health care of Americans, one started by LBJ with his Great Society programs in the mid-1960s, that the big costs, which are the costs of the FDA and the approval process of prescription medicines that make them prohibitively expensive, the cost of lawsuits and punitive damages where victims, which might be 1/100 of 1% of those who are helped by the drug, are able to claim billions in dollars worth of damages. And the inefficiency of a government running anything. That those are the big costs, and then you add to that the government is amoral, and so bribery, erroneous payments, skimming are prevalent. And the Obama nation didn't resolve any of those problems, just made them worse. Mike has said at the hearing of a House Oversight Subcommittee that federal agencies reported over $100 billion in improper payments during each of the last 5 years. That's roughly what the Obama administration spent on the Afghan war and other security operations last year. Oh, that was another well thought through use of $100 billion. Yes, let's go spend $100 billion on fraudulent payments and another $100 billion destroying a country. That's an incredible amount of money that has been misappropriated and mispaid, the rational John Micah said. The money is coming from an array of agencies and includes tax credits to families that didn't qualify, unemployment benefits to people who had jobs, and medical payments for treatments that were not necessary. In 2013, federal agencies made $97 billion in overpayments, according to agency estimates. Underpayments total $9 billion. Congressional investigators say the figure is probably much higher. Anytime you have a large human institution with almost no accountability, what you get is equivalent to the U.S. Post Office. It becomes way too expensive, and the quality of the service becomes horrible. It's what happens with the Veterans Administration hospitals. It's what happens with Social Security. It's why it's such a bankrupt system. It's why nationalized medicine, rather than being a good idea, is a horrible idea. It's inefficient. It's ineffective. It is a breeding ground for graft. The U.S. government itself has become very little more than a breeding ground for corruption. And there is no law that can solve that. And part of the problem is that as a nation for the last 50 years, we have educated, indoctrinated people to be amoral. You know, with the imposition of political correctness, most people are incapable of being judgmental. They are incapable of being moral. If you aren't judgmental, then you can't be civil. You can't be just. And we've indoctrinated generations of Americans to the point that they are incapable of knowing right from wrong. You know, in this case, the beneficiaries of these fraudulent payments are taking the check to the bank. They ought to know it's wrong, but they don't care. There are thousands of healthcare providers, we'll put healthcare again in air quotes, who are billing the U.S. government for services that they're not actually providing. Doctors who are doing the same thing. And then there's agencies within the U.S. government who are not paying for services that were actually provided. The whole thing is a house of cards. It is going to collapse. And here's $500 billion over the last 5 years being squandered on inappropriate payments. But the U.S. government always has a way of doing the wrong thing for the wrong reason. Here's Reuters announcing that Citigroup has agreed to pay a $7 billion fine to resolve a U.S. government investigation into shoddy mortgage-backed securities the bank sold to the run-up, during the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. Now, remember when the Bush administration was throwing money, billions of dollars at banks saying, you know, you need this money and you want to, we'll stimulate the economy, go loan it to people. And the banks didn't loan it to people. And then the government said, well, we want our money back. And then on top of all of that, now the federal government in the midst of all this says, you know what we're going to do? I think what we can really do to make the economy robust is we'll go sue banks. And we'll sue them for everything. You know, they got, $9 billion from a French bank here about 2 weeks ago. So in their desire to confiscate more money, here's $9 billion or $7 billion from Citicorp. Now, what do you think that does? You take $7 billion from Citicorp. What did Citicorp do? They follow the law. Now, I know there's a lot of you listening who don't like big banks and say, oh, no, it was the banks that brought on the this great recession of 2008. Poppycock. They're following the law. The U.S. government decided that they could control people more easily if people bought into their system. And one way to get people to buy into the system and is to get them to be homeowners. If they are homeowners, then they have to go to work because they have to pay their mortgage. And so what the U.S. government did to get people to buy into the system that controls them was that they saw to it, they forced banks to make way too high a percentage of a home's value, sometimes 105% of a home's value, rather than 70 to 80%, available by way of loans. And then they authorized and encouraged adjustable rate loans that they knew were being offered at artificially low rates, so that when the rates became market rates, the individual who took out the loan would no longer be able to pay the loans, which means that the banks would be left with the properties in foreclosure. And then under the Clinton administration, knowing that they had created a house of cards, the Clinton administration legalized the process of derivatives whereby a collection of mortgages could be sold to investors. And then when the whole thing collapsed, as it had to do, which there was no chance that it wouldn't collapse, rather than the government taking accountability and said, we screwed this up, we should not have gotten involved in the private sector, they blame the banks. Returning to the story on Citibank, of the $7 billion that was confiscated from Citibank, the U.S. Department of Justice, and there is no justice in the U.S. Department so named, is going to confiscate $4 billion. So $2.5 billion is being set aside in consumer relief, more than $200 billion to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and just $300 million to settle probes by five states. In other words, even of the $2.5 billion, it's going to federal and state agencies. This is just a money grab. It has nothing to do with any individual who has been harmed. It's nothing but a money grab. And by the way, the reason that the banks capitulate is that it's A, way too expensive to fight the federal government, and B, the Justice Department has control over licensing of banks. And it tells Citibank, you either capitulate and agree to the fine that we're imposing, which is unbelievably destructive to the economy because it's money they can't lend, and money they can't lend has a huge negative effect on what businesses can do. That what they say is you either capitulate or we will see to it that you lose your right to be a bank. You'll lose your license in the state of New York, for example. And if they lose, Citibank were to lose its right to act as a bank, its license in New York, it's bankrupt. And so the choice is you either sacrifice $7 billion to the insatiable monetary lust of the federal government, or you're out of business. And it's been bank after bank, company after company, one after another, that the United States is now the primary thief of the world. We think that the Islamic State has acted mercilessly in confiscating the wealth of banks and of others throughout Syria and Iraq. Well, they're pikers compared to being what's done by the United States government. You might say, it's just a bank. I don't care. What's it to me? You know, last week it was the French bank for about $9 billion. This week it's Citibank for $7 billion. It was a Swiss bank, two of them collectively for about $5 billion a few weeks before that. Toyota for about $6 billion not long before that. You might say that big corporations, you might have bought into this myth that the big corporations are those who are trying to usurp your rights. Well, the fact is that's not true. And if they can steal $7 billion from Citibank under blackmail, what's going to keep them from taking your savings, controlling your assets? You think that you have the resources that Citibank does? The commercial that played during the last segment from Midas Investments talked about the Chinese no longer buying T-bills, and that's really not true. The Chinese are not increasing their purchase of T-bills, which means that because the amount of T-bills that are in circulation as the U.S. government debt continues to grow so rapidly, that the Chinese percentage ownership of T-bills is decreasing, but not the aggregate amount of T-bills that the Chinese own. And the reason for that is a couplefold. One is that the Chinese, if they were to sell their T-bills, if they were to stop buying T-bills at least to the same amount aggregately that they presently hold, that the value of the T-bills they hold would be substantially depreciated because they're at negligible interest. And if they were to stop buying them because they're acknowledging the interest is way too low, it would require the interest on new T-bills to go up substantially, which would substantially increase the United States debt. But it would also devalue the T-bills they hold, because what you do is you discount the price to have the T-bills with lower interest pay the same yield. And so they would depreciate their assets. So they're beholden to continue to buy at least the same aggregate amount of T-bills. And so the U.S. government has simply imposed quantitative easing, which is illusionary money from the Fed buying America's debt. But there's other reasons the Chinese do it as well. One is to keep their currency at a lower exchange rate, which increases their exports. One last thought on China vis-a-vis the U.S. debt. And the Chinese now have about $1.3 trillion in U.S. T-bills. The Federal Reserve has just shy of $5 trillion, and other U.S. agencies have about $3 or $4 trillion. So now the dominant holder of U.S. treasuries is the Federal Reserve and U.S. agencies, which means it's all smoke and mirrors. It's all being done to create the illusion of being solvent. But this is a part of the problem of having debt, and that is that the Chinese have purchased the $1.3 billion worth of T-bills because A, they're selling goods to the United States, and the profit on those goods, they either have to buy U.S. assets or U.S. T-bills. So when you are a net importer of goods, the other country ends up owning you one way or the other, either through debt and they hold the mortgage on your country, or through they just simply buy land and businesses. The other is that by purchasing T-bills, the Chinese are able to regulate their currency. They can keep their currency at an artificially low rate when they use their currency to buy another nation's debt, particularly America's debt. Now, what that does is it makes Chinese exports a better value and American imports into China an inferior value, which then stimulates the Chinese economy, and it, at the same time, causes a deficit of trade in America. So if the Chinese buy a lot of T-bills, America is ruining its economy. And if they don't buy a lot of T-bills, America's economy is completely destroyed. So you really put yourself in a devilish position. That's why to be in debt is to be controlled. And all of these issues are at play as it relates to the national debt, which is continuing to grow at an alarming rate. Turning to the next item in the news, we haven't talked about it on this program in some time, but the killing is going on apace in the Donetsk region between the Ukraine and Russia. The Kiev government is now flying bombing raids. They're storming communities with tanks. They're dropping bombs from airplanes. And occasionally, their bombs and artillery fire are crossing the border and going into Russia. The rebel leaders are quoted as saying that his forces have beaten off columns of tanks and they have downed bomber aircraft, while the Ukrainian Kiev government is saying that those who are defending themselves against the army that's being deployed in their midst are going to suffer the consequences. And Russia is now saying to the Kiev government that if you continue to drop bombs that cross our border and fire artillery that kills Russians across our border, then you're going to have inevitable and irreversible consequences. So both sides now are escalating the tensions, incurring ever larger losses on both sides. The Kiev government wants to use its army to compel, to force the ethnic Russians in Donetsk to capitulate. They even want to capture Crimea. And they're doing so using American money, using American weapons. The Russians want the ethnic Russians to be able to make their own choice, to decide if they want to be independent, if they want to align with Kiev, if they want to align with Russia. Whatever they wish to do, that's fine. It just wants to prevent the government in Kiev from killing them. Now, most recently, as the Kiev government flew bombing runs over Donetsk cities, the ethnic Russians have fired missiles bringing down the bombers. The Kiev government has said that it will continue to use airstrikes against Donetsk, and that they have said that the Russians actually shot down their last airplane. Now, I think that the likelihood of the Russians shooting a surface-to-air missile from Russia at a Ukrainian bomber is not likely, but if they did, they would certainly be justified. The pacifists in this whole thing have been the Russians. The aggressors have been the United States and the Kiev government. But during the bombings perpetrated by the Kiev government, at least 15 civilians were killed in Luhansk and the neighboring Donetsk just on Sunday alone. Turning to another place where the world is ablaze in war, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday that he will use any means necessary to stop the Islamic militant group Hamas from bombing civilians, but declined to say when his military action will stop or whether he will continue using ground troops. Netanyahu said that his objective was to reach sustained quiet and that he'll continue until that is achieved, which means that this Israeli attack on Hamas was incited by Hamas sending some 80 rockets into Israel. The first day they sent 50, the second day they sent 30. Israel responded. And Israel is saying we'll continue to respond until they stop shooting rockets. And if they continue to shoot rockets, we'll continue to respond. We won't stop until they stop shooting rockets. Now, what Hamas wants, of course, is for Israel to wholly capitulate. They want to be able to send rockets into Israel, but to have Israel pledge not to respond to Hamas. Not going to happen. Yesterday, by the way, was a quiet day on the Israeli-Gaza front, but Israeli airstrikes today continued because the Israelis sustained more rocket fire from Hamas. Israel says that now 1,000 rockets have been fired from Gaza. Now, the Hamas signed an agreement where they said that they would cease shooting rockets into Israel. That was in 2012. The world brokered that ceasefire because Hamas was just getting pounded by the Israelis, and Hamas continued to send rockets. So the world intervened. They signed an agreement. Hamas said they wouldn't send any more rockets into Israel, and Hamas reneged on the agreement. So why would Israel ever trust Hamas again? You'd have to be insane to do so. But that, nonetheless, is today's reality. It is interesting that a month ago, we were talking about the stupidity, the immorality of the U.S. government, trading five senior Taliban officers, men who were responsible for perpetrating genocidal acts against other Muslims, and we traded them for an army deserter, Bo Bergdahl. And then to keep the deserter from talking to the press, he was whisked into a psychiatric unit. And then when he was brought into the United States, he was put back into a psychiatric unit. And for a period of a month now, has been told, here's the story. No media has been able to talk to him. We don't even know if his family has been able to talk to him. You know, the Obama administration created a complete disaster by what they did, making Americans more vulnerable to kidnapping worldwide, making Israelis more vulnerable to kidnapping worldwide. To rescue a deserter that was playing badminton and soccer with his captors. For the person who chose to be in the position he was in. And so they just, to silence him, have had him under an effectively house arrest in indoctrination units ever since. No one in the media has had the opportunity to talk to Bo Bergdahl. This story is indeed troubling to me. It just shows how far America has fallen morally. Cassidy Stay had seen the worst. The brutal killings of her parents and her siblings, her brothers and sisters, age 4 to 13 in their Texas home. On Saturday, the 15-year-old girl quoted the wise man from the Harry Potter series of novels in hopes of finding good among the horror. She said, happiness can be found even in the darkest times, citing J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. If one only remembers to turn on the light. So, didn't quote Yahweh. Didn't quote Yahusha. Quoted a mythical character in a series of books about wizards spiritualism.
They're cult.
That's what we have fallen to. Yeah, we get our moral fortitude now, as children of this country, based upon what the children read. They don't read the Torah. They don't read the prophets. They don't consider what Yahweh had to say. No, they would much rather read Rawlings, Harry Potter. And so they quote him. Yes, according to Harry Potter and the wise men, happiness can be found even in the darkest times. If only one remembers to turn on the light. Those are not words to live by. But yet, they were the words cited by this little girl. The remarks at a public memorial for her family were the teenager's first public comments since she emerged as the lone survivor from the carnage of her family's home. Authorities say Ronald Lee Haskell barged into the residence on Wednesday demanding to know the whereabouts of his estranged wife. She was not there, but the Stay family was, and soon, in a barrage of bullets, six of them were dead. They included Cassidy's parents. We'll be back in a moment. According to some of the abducted schoolgirls who escaped the grasp of the Islamic group Boko Haram, we were raped 15 times a day, every day, by 15 different men. This means that within 90 days of abduction, these mostly Christian girls have been raped 1,350 times, in addition, of course, to being kidnapped and tortured by sex-starved Islamic jihadists in the name of Allah. And the world does nothing. The world's out trying to influence every part of this globe, telling the Chinese what they ought to do, telling the Russians what they ought not to do, telling the Israelis they ought not defend themselves, supplying weapons to both sides in Syria and Iraq, trying to bail out of a horrible agreement with Iran on nuclear bombs. Got our fingers in everything, spending $1 trillion a year on the military and on spying in the United States alone. And yet, these 300 girls that were kidnapped by Islamic jihadists in Nigeria continue to be raped 15 times a day. No one seems to care. No one does anything. You know, if you're going to have a military, why not at least deploy it when you know there is no chance whatsoever that you can make a bad situation worse? There is no way to make life worse for these little girls in Nigeria. It's one of the things that we could actually do. You know, the invasion of Iraq made life worse for everyone. The invasion of Afghanistan made life worse for everyone. Both of those invasions were suicidal. And I'm not saying the United States should invade Nigeria. But it's for damn sure we could use the $1 trillion that we squander every year, some of it, to at least provide some support so these little girls wouldn't continue to be ravaged by Muslims 15 times a day, every girl. Where are you, old Muslim guy, as your fellow Muslims continue to kidnap and torture and rape little girls around the world? It's reprehensible that the world doesn't come with one voice to expose and condemn Islam. Savage, ruthless, grotesquely immoral. As I predicted, France is digging in even deeper in Mali, in the Central African Republic, in Mauritania, in Chad, Burkina Faso. When they said that when Holliday was having so much political kickback at home because his socialist, communist schemes and confiscation of people's earnings were turning the French economy into an abject failure. He decided that he would become a wartime president and sent French military equipment and personnel initially to Mali. And I said, there is no chance of success. All they will do is dig themselves in. They won't be able to tell who's a good guy and who's a bad guy. The opponents here don't wear uniforms. And that was a year ago. They've accomplished nothing. And now they are establishing a permanent African unit to stop the continued emergence and growth of jihadist groups. Another 3,000 French soldiers will be deployed, along with troops from Mali, Mauritania, Burkina Faso, and Chad. On Monday, France ended its military deployment in Mali, only to set up a new Islamic insurgency there. So I guess I was wrong. They ended their deployment. Well, no, they really didn't. They just renamed it, re-equipped it, augmented it, increased it, and made it permanent. The new long-term force named Operation Barkhane will be based in the Chadian capital. Oh, so it's not based in Mali. So, well, that's a distinction. But it will have a mandate to operate across borders. It will target Islamists in Mali, in Chad, and Niger. The French troops will be backed by fighter jets and helicopters and drones. Oh, my. Back after the news.